Hello and welcome to the Mejlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pannier, host of the Mejlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. On September 21st, Kazakh President Kasym-Jomart Tokayev called for a snap presidential election, and that election is approaching. On November 20, voters in Kazakhstan will go to the polls and choose from a field of six candidates. Incumbent Kasym-Jomart Tokayev is expected to win easily. None of the five other candidates opposing him are well known, so there's no mystery about who's going to win. The big mystery is why now are they holding an election right now? What is the situation in Kazakhstan that makes it necessary to conduct an early presidential election, and what can Kazakhstan expect moving forward into the next presidential term? To discuss all this, I am joined by Ben Godwin, the head of analysis at Prism Political Risk Management. Prism advises clients on the impact of unfolding political and economic developments in countries such as Kazakhstan. Ben leads the company's work on Central Asia, having lived and worked in Kazakhstan for 7 years. He continues to travel regularly to the region and conduct research and maintains a wide network of contacts in the country. And Darhan Umerbekov, he's an experienced journalist who's currently digital editor at RFRL's Kazakh service in Astana. A veteran of reporting under difficult circumstances this year, which also ended up with him being detained at least once that I remember for his work. Thank you for joining us, Darhan, because I know it's late there. And I want to start with you, Darhan. First, I'm of course not in Kazakhstan. So for my benefit, can you describe the scene in Kazakhstan as the presidential election approaches? I mean, what are people saying about the election? Is it even a topic of conversation among people on the streets when they talk? And what are some of the signs around town that would let you know that there is an election? Are there a lot of posters, banners, those kind of things?
Hi, Ben. Hi, Bruce. Thank you for inviting me to this podcast. Yeah, I have no pools or any social research to rely on, but we do vox pops on the street, ask people if they know the candidates, the rest of the candidates, and the people who stop by and talk to us. Most of them tell us that they don't know about candidates anything, so they are unaware of the campaign and they are not interested in the election. And some of them told us that why to hold the elections, because everyone knows that Tokayev is going to win. It's just a play. Of course, there are many posters, and I'm living in the capital, so there are abundant of posters and billboards and other kinds of advertisements. But overall, in comparison to the election of 2019, it seems that the interest in elections is quite low, and there are many other topics that are being discussed well on social media or among ordinary people, but no one sees the election as a viable, serious contest among real political figures. People are seeing the Tokayev as a just winner, and they say that the candidates are not serious and they are just a puppet candidates, or we call it in Kazakhstan, not candidate, but sandidate, which literally means fun candidates.
Okay, thank you very much. And before, let me follow up, because you were just telling me that you watched the debate among the presidential candidates. And of course, I should make clear that the President Tokayev did not take part in this, correct?
Yes, it ended just 10 or 15 minutes ago. And we asked why President Tokayev wasn't attending the debate, and his representative on the debate, also a speaker of our Kazakh Parliament's lower chamber, Yerlan Koshan, told us that President has more important issues to deal with, and he is the head of state, and he has so many duties to fill in, and the speaker was going to attend the debate. And it's not the first time Tokayev missing the debate. In 2019, he didn't attend the debate as well. And at that time, another speaker, the then speaker of the lower chamber, Mevlüt Çimbayev, attended the debate. And today we saw that the rest of the candidates, they were not challenging President Tokayev. they were just ridiculing each other, making fun of the rest of the candidates. And when it came to asking the questions, they addressing questions to Tokayev's representative, they were asking like an innocuous question. Then these questions were easy to answer because they were reflected in Tokayev's program. And the questions were quite abstract and every person could answer them. And what else could I say about the debate? Another moment when of the debate is that the format looked very strange because candidates were allowed to ask only two questions and a candidate were allowed to answer two questions. So I expected that all five candidates would be targeting President Tokayev's representative, but they seemed not interested in the speaker's answers. During the campaign or during the process of registration of candidates, we asked one question all candidates. Why are you disappointed in Tokayev's policy? Why are you going to oppose him? And Saltanat Tursunbekova, who used to be a prosecutor in General Prosecutor's Office, said that he was not going to be a president. He was attending this campaign for another reason. And the other candidates as well couldn't answer this question properly. They were reluctant to criticize President Tokayev. And no one mentioned the January events which took place in Kazakhstan at the beginning of this year and which led to the deaths of at least 238 people. And President Tokayev, the incumbent, was the one who ordered to shoot without warnings. So no one tried to hold President Tokayev accountable for that decision.
Okay, hey, great. And one more question. Just a departure, but just for the scorecard here, so to speak. In previous elections, there's always been complaints, not just in Kazakhstan, but in all the Central Asian countries, that the opposition candidates do not receive equal media attention. You know, you've probably been watching some Kazakh television and you see the newspapers out there. Are opposition candidates getting coverage by the state media?
If we ask this question, the independent observers, they wouldn't agree to call them opposition candidates because there are no legitimate opposition candidates. Only one represents the OASDP party, which used to be a real opposition party in the past, but now no one sees them as a real opponent to their current regime. So regarding their reflection on the local media, I didn't see any problem with this question because there is a strict rule when it comes to the candidate's campaign. So they're allocated more or less the same amount of money. And there is a requirement for the local media to give an equal amount of time or page or whatever to each candidate if they are to talk to them or if they are to air their programs. So the issue is that no one sees them as a real opposition candidate, unlike Amirjan Kosan in 2019, who was more or less the legitimate candidate, and his candidacy drew many attention. People came to the polling centers to vote for him, to support him.
Okay, great. Thank you. And also thanks for making that distinction between opposition and opponent. I should have used the word opponent in that question because these are kind of staged candidates anyway, so they don't represent any genuine opposition. Ben, I want to move to you now. This is an early presidential election. Tokayev was elected in 2019, as Darhan has already mentioned. He could have stayed on under the terms of at least the old constitution. He could have stayed on until 2024 and then run again for office and stayed until 2029. Instead, they decided to amend the constitution and instate a one 7-year term presidency. And now we're holding an early election. And Tokayev still, which means Tokayev, he'll win the election, but he'll still stay on until 2029. So what exactly is the point of having to redo the Constitution and hold an early election, in your opinion?
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. I think the first thing to say is to follow up on what Darhan was saying. The purpose of these elections is not to have a wide debate across society and decide who's going to be the leader of Kazakhstan. Clearly, the purpose of the election is to cement Tokayev's position as the president of Kazakhstan. And I think there are two basic reasons for that. One is relates to the events of January, and the second relates to future events that we're likely to see in Kazakhstan. Of course, we're probably all familiar with the events of January, where we saw a mass uprising calling for better socioeconomic and living standards and political reform. But of course, within the January events, we also saw an attempted coup against the president from the supporters of Tokayev's predecessor, Nursultan Nazarbayev. So since this coup attempt that Tokayev, of course, overcame, we've seen efforts by Tokayev to consolidate his position as the sole ruler, to sideline Nazarbayev, and to remove the influence of the Nazarbayev family from the political economy of Kazakhstan. So we've seen constitutional changes that remove the status of the Nazarbayev family from the constitution. And now this election is sort of the coronation, as it were, of Tokayev that will cement his position as president. While it may not be recognized as free and fair, the result, whatever it will be a show of power and authority from Tokayev to demonstrate to everybody that he is now the sole president of Kazakhstan. The other reason for having the elections now, I think, is that Tokayev is essentially future-proofing himself. The unrest of January 2022 was really driven by socioeconomic conditions. And we have been tracking the number of strikes taking place on a monthly basis, inflation levels, salaries, unemployment leading up to January. And it was quite clear that the situation was getting quite difficult for many people across the regions of Kazakhstan. Of course, because of the global economic situation, the war in Ukraine, these living standards have not got better, despite the promises of the president. And it doesn't look like in the near term that things are going to improve for the population of Kazakhstan in economic terms. Some, of course, is a result of the own president's policies and the lack of reform over many years. But of course, there are very difficult global conditions that Kazakhstan is facing. So it seems to me that if you're going to have a presidential election, this is probably a pretty good time to run for election. The Nazarbayev family has been sidelined. That's broadly popular. You've made a lot of promises to improve living standards, to introduce political reform, but you've not yet had the time to deliver on those reforms and not yet had the time for people to get sort of upset with your performance as president. So Tokayev may well be at the peak of his popularity at the moment. And so, like many politicians, this is the best time to look for re-election.
You know, I'm just kind of curious, and I'll ask Darhan this in a second too, but Ben, you first. How much does the situation of Russia and its war on Ukraine, does it play any factor into this? You know, because of course, there have been Russian officials who have made some fairly threatening comments against Ukraine, not just against the government, but on the claims on the territory, Kazakhstan, but claims on the territory of Kazakhstan also. Kazakhstan is, being, as we see in the media all the time, has distanced itself from Russia greatly in the last few months. Was there anything to do with Russia's war on Ukraine that you think is playing a role in the decision to hold early presidential elections?
I think you're right. I think there is something there. There's obviously the economic aspect, which we've talked about. But Russia, particularly as it suffered defeats in Ukraine, starting with Kharkiv and beyond, has behaved extremely unpredictably. And certainly taken a number of actions that, whatever you consider Russia's interest to be, are clearly not in Russia's interests, and in many ways made the situation for Russia more difficult. So I certainly think that the president is thinking that we have a very dangerous and unpredictable neighbor to our north, and perhaps it's best to seal the deal with an election now, because it's not quite clear what the status of Russian-Kazakh relations are going to be in the new year.
Yeah, and Darhan, I want to ask you about that too. I mean, how much are people saying anything about that? Or what do they say about Tokayev's stance against Russia? And does that play into his popularity in Kazakhstan?
political observers, they all mentioned that the war in Ukraine also played a role in this snap election, but it's not clear to what extent. So in the past we've seen that European or Western politicians were reluctant to insert the pressure on the Kazakh regime, thinking that it would force them, it would drive Kazakhstan's regime into the Russians' orbit. And now, if the Russia loses the war in Ukraine and the democratic world wins, it would be more challenging for the Kazakh authority to be authoritarian. So they have, it would be like, you know, in Kazakhstan, people are aware of the dangers coming from Russia. And I'm talking about the ordinary citizen, when they're to demand something, they always take into account the Putin's regime. And with Putin's losing the war, the population's demands and requests might be different, and they might be very ambitious. It would also be very challenging for Tokayev's regime as well. But I would like to highlight that the Kazakh authorities, they are inclined to hold snap elections, because holding regular elections is also another risk, because people or the political forces, as they like to refer, may prepare well for those kind of campaigns. And when there is a regular elections, people or the candidate or other political units can be prepared for those kind of elections. But holding snap elections take usually people or the general population by surprise, and usually ends with low turnouts and ends up with no competition at all.
No, great. That, you know, and thanks for pointing out too that they're holding early elections, because I am correct in saying that they have never held an election, actually a parliamentary or presidential election, according to schedule. Is this true?
I think there was an exception in 2005 with a presidential election. But most of the time, Nazarbayev was holding snap elections.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. That's also something everyone should know. We have reached the halfway point, and I want to remind that this is the Mejlis podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. We're discussing the upcoming presidential election in Kazakhstan and some of the challenges the country faces going forward, some of the issues that are surrounding the elections at the moment that are important for Kazakhstan. And to discuss all this today, I'm joined by Darkhan Umerbekov, an experienced journalist, currently digital editor at RFARL's Kazakh service in Astana, and Ben Godwin, the head of analysis at PRISM Political Risk Management. PRISM advises clients on the impact of unfolding political and economic developments in countries such as Kazakhstan. Ben leads the company's work on Central Asia, having lived and worked in Kazakhstan for 7 years. He continues to travel regularly to the region and conduct research, and maintains a wide network of contacts in the country. And Ben, I want to get to you. You'd mentioned the economic situation, and we've talked a little bit about Russia. And you also had mentioned the January unrest. I mean, there's a lot of issues around Kazakhstan and you know, inside Kazakhstan that are turning the political wheels and everything. How much of this has been addressed? You said the economic situation really didn't seem to have improved. You know, the January unrest, there's a lot of people that say that there's a lot of questions hanging about that. So moving forward after November 20th, you know, what are some of the priorities you see Tokayev having to address as he enters his new term?
Yeah, it's certainly a very unenviable situation for the president. The first thing to pick up on is the January unrest. It's a real missed opportunity that the president or the government of Kazakhstan has not given its people a really coherent explanation as to what has taken place. We, over the last year, have basically tried to piece together all the different events and try and understand what exactly took place. I think we have a fairly good account now, but really, it's up to the government to provide its people with that explanation. And that is something that, you know, could be a big win for the Kazakh government if they were really prepared to be honest with the people about the challenges facing the country and what needs to be done going forward. which sort of takes us to the economic situation. Now, a lot of it you could argue is not the fault of Tokayev. Clearly, the global economic situation is extremely challenging. And of course, Tokayev is inheriting a system that has become completely sclerotic. The state-led development model set up by Nazarbayev has just not been dynamic enough to supply new growth, to feed improvements in wages for people, and to increase productivity across the country. Essentially, Kazakhstan remains so heavily dependent on oil. About 3% of the population are employed in the oil industry, but the oil industry is providing all of the growth and revenue into the national budget, export revenue, which means that a lot of people are working in very low-wage, low-productivity industries. Now, that is a problem that Tokayev has inherited. And I must say, to his credit, he has set out at least a fairly credible plan as to how to deal with those challenges. But reform is painful. Reform is painful, I guess, on two levels. The first level is that really to get the economy moving, you need to reduce the role of the state in the economy, which includes reducing social benefits. It includes privatizing companies, liberalizing prices so there are no more price controls in the economy. All of these things, much needed to get new investment in the country, are going to be extremely painful for the population to go through, particularly at a time when living standards are suffering so much at the moment. This should have really been done during the oil boom of the 2000s. It was a really big missed opportunity. The second challenge, of course, for Tokayev is a lot of this economic reform is going to mean taking on entrenched economic interests across the country. And of course, there are a lot of powerful people with a lot of money that certainly have a vested interest in keeping the system as it is. So Tokayev has to walk this tightrope of introducing reform, but somehow supporting household incomes and living standards, and not crossing too many of the oligarchs at any one time to create a source of opposition to him.
Okay, thank you. Darhan, you're out there in Kazakhstan, and of course you are a journalist and you're talking with people all the time. What is your impression? What are the most important issues for them that they want to see Tokayev resolve right now? What things do they want to see him do first?
I agree with Ben and it's hard to imagine now how Tokayev is going to improve our economic situation because in order to create sustainable economy, there should be a check and balance system because the wealthy people are reluctant to invest money into Kazakhstan right now because there is no check and balance. They can lose their business for no reason because we have no independent judiciary system, we have no independent the legislative body, and we have very weak media. So if I was the oligarch or a quite wealthy person, I would invest in European countries or in the West or in the US or Canada. So I think the main criteria for or the main condition for improving economy is to create the check and balance system. Second, just what we see what President Tokayev is saying and we see what is he deciding. We see that they are not coinciding. So, for example, President Tokayev says that he is creating just and fair Kazakhstan, but the loan amnesty he declared doesn't seem to be fair to those who were paying their loans on time. So second, there were many people who were bringing vehicles from Armenia and Georgia illegally. So these were the quite cheap vehicles in comparison to what that of Kazakhstan. And President Tokayev said that the state should register them and forgive them for those these illegal cars, and that again was unfair decision for those who were bringing cars, paying all the taxes, and they're bringing cars legally. And again, so we see that President Tokayev is declaring fair Kazakhstan, but he's doing unfair things to the rest of the population. so far, it seems that, as Ben said, the authorities are only concerned with the cementing their grip on power, but what they are doing with the economy, I don't think that it will bring, you know, it would be fruitful in the distant future.
Let me ask you a follow-up question real quick, Darhan. I mean, I've seen an article recently, and I've heard this from other people too, that they don't see any difference between Nazarbayev's system and Takayev, even since the January unrest. Do you see any differences between the Nazarbayev system and then the system that Takayev has right now?
So there was a little hope after the January event when Tokayev said that he was going to reform the politics and the economy. And there was a hope, but day by day after the referendum, after he wanted to change the constitution twice in one single year, and that he was going to extend the presidential term, these are the decisions that reminded what Nazarbayev was doing during those 30 years. And now more and more people are getting convinced that Tokayev is a continuation of the Nazarbayev's regime. But at the beginning, you mentioned the renaming of the capital. I wanted to add one point about this. So there is a saying that people revolt not because they are struggling with living conditions, but people revolt when they are given hope, and these hopes are not met. So, coming back to Tokayev in 2019, on March 19, I guess, when Nazarbayev said that he was resigning, and that he was promoting Tokayev into the presidency, people were jubilant. And even the adamant critics of Nazarbayev were saying that probably we should forgive his wrongdoings because he was, giving up power voluntarily or in a peaceful way. And the next day, President Tokayev is proposing to rename the capital after Nursultan Nazarbayev. And, the hope that was generated in one day disrupted. And starting from that moment, people were protesting on streets. And coming back to this year, after the January events, there was a hope in the current system. And now we see that the day by day, the hope is not going to come true. So just hard to project what would happen in the distant future with this.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Darhan. Excellent for providing some background to all of this too. Thank you. Ben, my question to you is that, picking up on what Darhan just said, Tokayev, when he came in, of course, he renamed the capital. And I remember how that process went. It was very quick. I mean, for a few brief minutes there, he had said maybe this was such an important issue, renaming the capital after the first president, that maybe we ought to put it to a national referendum. And then within, like I said, an hour's time, all of a sudden it was just a done deal and it was approved. There was no public discussion. It wasn't even a discussion among government officials. They just decided to do it. It was the same with the constitutional referendum. It was the same with the early presidential elections, where he kind of threw that idea out at first, and then in record time, practically, it was a done deal without the public really having much say in it. What do you see as a veteran of watching Kazakhstan? Is there a difference in what Tokayev says as opposed to what Nazarbayev said, or what Tokayev has been doing lately, post January, say, than what Nazarbayev was doing during all the years he was in power? Is there something to distinguish him from his predecessor?
I think there is a distinction between Tokayev now and the final years of the Nazarbayev era. But actually, what Tokayev is doing now is very similar to perhaps what Nazarbayev did during the 2000s. When we had this commodity super cycle, oil prices were high, copper prices were high, and the country was doing well, growing very fast. Actually, Nazarbayev did begin to deliver on a little bit of economic reform, liberalizing the economy, and even was a little bit more tolerant of opposition political movements and certainly a more sort of heterodox media environment. But of course, as soon as in the 2000s, we hit the global financial crisis, as soon as there was a political crisis around the democratic choice of Kazakhstan, the system snapped back shut again and really remained in deep freeze from about sort of 2009, 2010, all the way up to Tokayev's ascendancy to the presidency. So what we're seeing with Tokayev is that he is loosening some of the screws on civil society in some areas. He is trying to liberalize the economy in some areas, reduce the role of the state. But I very much fear that the instinct will be to snap back again as soon as there is a bit of a crisis, as soon as there's a problem. And we have seen that certainly in the economy, where although the plan is to liberalize gas prices, of course, price controls have been reinstated. And I'm sure Darhan will have seen this in civil society, where despite a lot of political reform being passed on paper, the environment for civil activists and potential opposition activists is still extremely harsh on the ground. And there doesn't seem to be any sign that that's letting up. So I think there is the possibility for reform. There is the possibility of change. But there's so much temptation, I think, for a regime like this to snap back into a state-led, centralized system of power as soon as anything difficult happens for them, such as uprisings or political challenges or economic crises.
Okay, and we're starting to get run out of time here a little bit. So I just want to ask you both, going forward again, post November, what's your outlook for Kazakhstan? I mean, admittedly, there's a lot of turbulence in the neighborhood around there. Afghanistan is unstable. Russia's got its problems. What should the priorities? What do you see as being the priorities for Kazakhstan to try to get itself out of this or get itself moving forward anyway, keeping out of harm's way, so to speak, in a dangerous neighborhood? Ben, if you could start.
Yeah, of course. Well, I think the reforms that we'd like to see, certainly the president is going to experiment with them, but he's extremely cautious. And he's also aware, as you said, of the international political environment. So relations with Russia are difficult, which means there is the potential for destabilization from Russia. But of course, Kazakhstan is also growing more and more reliant on China as both an economic partner and a political partner. And I don't see any evidence that Xi Jinping or the Chinese Communist Party is going to be interested in seeing Kazakhstan implement political and economic reform. If anything, China is moving in the other direction, the direction of more centralization, more tightening of civil society. And so even if the president does have the wish to deliver on both political and economic reform, he's doing it in an extremely hostile geopolitical, economic, and political environment. So I do think in areas of real inefficiency in the economy, we're likely to see some progress. We're likely to see, I think, some of the oligarchs step back and maybe even face arrest. But the question is, what happens after that? Does the president and his entourage use that as an opportunity to find positions of wealth and power themselves? Or does it lead to a genuine liberalization of the economy? Given all these adverse environment, I would suggest that probably Tokayev is going to play things pretty close to his chest and keep pretty close control of the political sphere and the economy.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. Darhan, you heard what Ben just said there. What can Tokayev do? I mean, there's what people want him to do. A lot of expectations on the part of various parties about what he should do. But I mean, in your opinion, you're out there in Kazakhstan. What with China as a neighbor, with Russia as a neighbor, all that. What can he do that would be, move Kazakhstan in a different direction than it has been moving in since it was independent?
It seems that overall people support, people usually support Nazarbayev and now Tokayev in their foreign policy that we should be, keeping equal distance from big powers like Russia and China, people are more disappointed with the regime's internal policy. I think that the future or the post-election period depends on how the current regime manage to alleviate the pain or the consequences of the current crisis or the war in Ukraine and the inflation. There is a huge inflation in Kazakhstan as well. And if the crisis gets worse, I think there would be the waves of protests and the regime would start huge repression campaign against civil society, against free speech. Because for the last year, I've noticed that Tokayev has repeatedly said, referred to foreign enemies for provocateurs. His remarks about so-called free news outlets, and they sound very threatening to civil society, and the authoritarian regimes have tendency to blame on their wrongdoings on their failures others. In case of the Putin, they were blaming the collective, so in quotation mark collective West, they were blaming the Central Asian nations for being, in quotation mark, Russophobian. They were blaming Lenin's policy. They were blaming everyone, not themselves. So our Kazakh authorities, they were blaming journalists. They were blaming for the influence of Western culture and Western policies. They were blaming the Kandas or the Kazakh repatriates in the past. You should remember the Janavuzian protests in 2011 when Kulibayev, Nazarbayev's son-in-law, accused the Kazakh repatriates who came from Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan, and he said that they were the ones who caused these protests in Janavuzian. So I'm afraid that if they fail to handle the economic situation, they would launch huge campaign against civil society. And I'm afraid to imagine the consequences of that, because it might end up, clearing all the opposing voices in Kazakhstan, or it might end up with another January events. I don't know which one is worse.
Thanks. Well, it's certainly there's a lot of room for pessimism about what might happen to Kazakhstan going forward. And I know that we're all going to be watching in the coming months to see which direction the country heads into, or if it keeps going in the direction it's been into. But I do want to thank you both. Thank you, Ben. And thank you, Darhan, for being on the show today. And a huge thanks to Nathan Shoemaker. He's our Mejlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Mejlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting RFARL's website at rfarl.org. Thank you very much, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.